Welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you in association with Royal London. Royal London would like to start a conversation about the advice gap. In their latest research, they explore how the industry could unlock significant opportunities for advisors and connect more people with the financial support they need. Search Royal London Advice Gap to find out more. Now I'll hand you over to the Money Marketing editorial team to get the conversation underway. I'm Katie Pickman, the editor of Money Marketing. Thank you very much for joining us for this special episode of our podcast. I'm delighted to have some of our wonderful editorial team with me today. I will allow them to introduce themselves so you're aware of who's speaking later on in the conversation.
Michael Climes here, news editor.
And Charlotte Richards, the investment editor.
And Amanda Newman-Smith, features writer.
Thanks everyone for being part of this today. Obviously the advice gap is something we talk about fairly frequently within Money Marketing, but with it being such an important topic, arguably we could be doing even more conversations like this. But maybe we should sort of start at the beginning really as to what we think is meant by the term advice gap. I know for me personally, before I joined Money Marketing, I had very, very little knowledge of what a financial advisor is, what they do. Arguably, that might still be the case, but I'm trying and learning every day as we go. But maybe that's part of the problem. I didn't know this profession really existed, so maybe I fall into that sort of advice gap. And I'd imagine several people do. There's different groups. There's no one big group that's in this advice gap. It's made up of several segments. Charlotte, what, you've been in the industry a bit longer than me. What's your understanding of what we mean by advice gap?
Just because I'm in the industry longer doesn't mean I understand more. To me, it's obviously the people that have been left behind for some reason whatsoever, and it could be all sorts of things. I think the main one is the wealth gap in this country in particular as well, and I think that that's probably the main one, that people just assume that financial advice is just for the very wealthy, where I'm sure that there are some very wealthy people out there who don't have advice. So that's it to me. But there's also some other areas as well. Like for me, disability is a big gap, a big sort of, there's a sort of barrier there for me. As a disabled person, I understand how that can be a barrier as well for other people looking for advice.
Obviously, if you don't want to go into too much of your own experience, Charlotte, but if you wouldn't mind sharing with our audience what your disability is and how that sort of affected you potentially in getting financial advice or in your day to day.
Sure, I could be here all day, but the sort of cliff notes for it are I'm deaf in one ear, so I identify as deaf. I also have a couple of chronic illnesses as well that are more of an issue when it comes to sort of protection problems. But for me, the biggest issue is being able to actually talk to somebody and hear them properly.
Yeah. Mike, you've been covering pensions for a number of years now, I think seven. So what's your understanding of it? Is this something that's cropped up a lot over that time?
For sure. I think that my understanding of the financial advice gap is obviously shaped by my experience of pensions. And I think pensions is one of the rare sort of financial products where it really can be with you from the beginning of your life through the middle to the end. And so you can see how that translates into the advice gap, because a lot of advisors tend to want to advise people with a high degree of minimum income and wealth, and that feeds into pensions because it takes time to build up a lot of pension wealth from income. And so that means that a lot of young people who might want financial advice are shut out simply because they don't have enough accumulated income and wealth to really see an advisor, because the advisor will say it's not worth our while seeing you because you simply don't have enough wealth and income in your bank account for us to make it profitable for us to our bottom line. So that's where I really see the advice gap for young people. I think it's an intergenerational tension, and I think that it's something that could be looked at, and writing about pensions really gives you a window into that particular young versus old dynamic, I think.
Amanda, I think in one of your weekend essays, you'd said before you joined money marketing, you were a similar person to me that had very little knowledge of the profession and what it was. Obviously, over the years, you've been speaking to numerous advisors, so I'd imagine you've built up a better picture of what that is now. What's your understanding of it, Amanda, from speaking to people in the industry?
Well, to me, Kate, as you quite rightly said, in my weekend essay, I pointed out that I was brought up in Bethnal Green and Hackney, which are both, you know, said to be deprived areas. They're very multicultural. And to me, it's kind of, you've got to remember that, you know, cultural reasons can be a reason why people don't take advice and don't see it as something for them. I was speaking to an Asian advisor only this morning, and he was saying how in the Asian community, advice is very much, you know, something for the family. You know, you'd speak to someone you know, you wouldn't sort of take it outside the community and go and speak to a financial advisor. And I think that's something that we have to remember as well. You know, that there's a perception that you don't want to discuss something so personal with a stranger because there's trust issues as well to deal with. So I was told by this advisor that, you know, the Asian community are very reluctant to invest in a pension, and they love property. And the reason is because they actually can see it and touch it. So realistically, the only contact they will get with the advice profession is through a mortgage broker, not, you know, a general financial advisor for other areas.
Yeah, it sounds like there's lots of different, like we said before, why there's reasons that people might fall into that gap. Charlotte, what are some of the other things that you think are some of the barriers? So obviously we've sort of said about disabilities, we've had, you know, potentially ethnic groups. Are there any others? Young people as well, Mike suggested. Do we think there's any other groups, if we can define them as groups, that fall into this area?
I think gender can be an issue as well. I think particularly, like, say, if you're a woman on your own, you might not be, I don't know, say if you've had like some bad, or even a man on the right, whatever, you could have like a past history that sort of makes it a bit more difficult to sort of open up to people. So if you're like an elderly woman on her own that has got a huge lump sum or something, say, or this can happen both ways, obviously it could be an elderly man, a huge lump sum from their spouse, that could be an issue as well if you've like sort of never spoken to anybody else about it. A lot of older people, they just sort of deal with it themselves. It's similar to what Amanda was saying, just sort of keep it within yourself. A lot of people would have had sort of these workplace and like final salary pension schemes as well, where they've not really had to think about anything bigger because they're going to be getting that salary through retirement. I think Amanda touched on it as well. So it's just the confidence in being able to open up to someone is a huge thing, because as a society as well, we don't really talk about money. So I think confidence is a big thing. It's a lot to go into someone you've never spoken to before, never clapped eyes on perhaps, and said, oh, this is how much money I have. Like, that's, as a society, we don't do that. It's very un-British to talk about money. So I think that's probably something that really stands out for me as well.
Yeah, I think part of it is maybe people don't know they need it. They don't know they're missing out on this thing for a first place. And also there's different stages of your life that you might sort of need it. And I think, Mike, you sort of touched on the affordability, whether it's worthwhile for an advisor to take that particular client on. We might all be at different stages within our career, in our profession, our life. You know, are you saving for a house? Are you saving for a wedding? There might be different things that people need, but also things that might happen later on. What else have you seen, Mike, at some of the people that you're speaking to as to what this means and what people are doing?
Well, in terms of pensions, as it's my main angle, and that's where I speak from, I still think there's a lot of sort of confusion and befuddlement with pensions generally across the board. And for years, it's a bit of a cliche now, but everyone talks about how we need to get people saving for their pension. We need to get people engaging with their pension. It could be the most valuable asset you have after your house, but that still doesn't seem to translate. And I think that that's a challenge, not just for financial advisors, but financial services generally. But if you can meet a financial advisor who can really help with you, with your pension, it's really worth your while. And it's still something which I'm not sure quite how to solve, really, because the only reason why I know about my pension and I care about it is accidentally is that I'm a pensions journalist. And if I hadn't become a pensions journalist by accident, I wouldn't care about it so much. So I think how to make people care about things with purpose, not just by accident, is maybe where financial advisors can help. But sort of meeting the perfect financial advisor is maybe a bit like meeting the perfect person or perfect therapist. It's by accident, and I'm not sure how you can actually design it or engineer it scientifically.
Yeah, Charlotte.
I think just following on from that, Mike, is the general understanding of financial services as a whole as well. It's like you touched upon, Katie, you didn't have any idea about this. And I'm sure there are still elements of it that we're writing about every single day that you think, what on earth is this? Or what does this
Absolutely.
Mean? This industry is so full of jargon. Even after a decade of me doing this, I still don't understand everything. Or there's new things coming in and out. And to get somebody to talk about this sort of thing and to understand it, that's a hard thing to do. And it would stop me doing it as well if I didn't understand something. And I'm a fairly confident person, but if I didn't understand something or think that I would understand it, that would be a huge barrier for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of information to try and take in, isn't it? But where do you start if you're going into this completely with no view of it previously? Where do you go? Obviously, most of us nowadays will go straight on Google or whatever your search engine of choice is and look for that. And that's that sort of information overload straight away of, okay, is it going to be really expensive? Is this going to be the thing for me? Maybe I'll put that off to another day then. I'll just leave that for now. I'm not ready to explore and delve into that unknown. So, Amanda, just to wrap it up then, obviously, we'll meet again and talk about maybe some of the things of how we can solve it. I don't think as collectively as a group of journalists that can fix this problem, but potentially wider conversations within the industry as well.
Can I also add that I think there needs to be a bit of a severing of the link between the idea that if you're a low earner, that your needs are simplified and, you know, you don't need advice. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I was looking on one advisor's website recently and he did some pro bono advice for a client who was a worker of the Salvation Army. So wasn't really earning loads, but they had quite a tricky pension. So, you know, if that advisor didn't offer pro bono advice, where would that guy have gone to get some advice? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Well, thanks, everyone. Hopefully that's given some people a bit more of an understanding of what the advice gap is. And do join us again next time where we can explore maybe some of those barriers to entry and how we can break them down.
This podcast was brought to you by Royal London. To find out more about their research into the advice gap, visit advisor.royallondon.com/advicegap.